ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। मंगला चमंदिस्या गिना गिना स्वाकया चक्षान्मिलतमेना तस्मै गुरवे नमः। So today we're reading from the 10th canto, chapter 84, verse 27 through 30. So we'll read through the verses together, and then the 30th one we'll say responsively. Shri Shuku Vacha Ichanunyapyadasharam Dhritarashtram Yudhisthiram Vrarshe Swashram Angantum Munayo Dadare Manaha. Translation, Shukadeva Goswami said, having thus spoken, O wise king, the sages then took leave of Lord Dasharatha, Dhritarashtra, and Yudhisthira and prepared to depart for their ashrams. 84:28. Tad-vikṣa-tanu-pa-vraja Vasudeva-mahāvaśa Pranamya-kopa-saṅgriya Bhava-sedan-suyanchita. Translation. Seeing that they were about to leave, the renowned Vasudeva approached the sages. After bowing down to them and touching their feet, he spoke to them with carefully chosen words. 84:29. Shri Vasudeva Vacha Namo Vasava Devebhya Vishaya Shrotam Arhata Karmana Kamaniharo Yatasyanas Taruchatam. Translation, Shri Vasudeva said, obeisance to you, the residents of all the demigods. Please hear me, O sages. Kindly tell us how the reactions of one's work can be counteracted by further work. Purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Here Vasudeva addresses the sages as the residents of all the demigods. His statement is confirmed in the authoritative Shruti Mantras, which declare, Yavatir vai devatastha sarva veda vidi brahmane vasanti. Whatever demigods exist, all reside in a brahmana who knows the Veda. And text 84:30. We'll do it responsibly, so I'll say and then you can say. Shinaravacha Nati Chitram Midam Vipra Vasudeva Bhubutsaya Krishna Vabakam Yanna Prichiti Shreya Atmanaha Srinara Vacha Nati Chitram Idam Vipra Vasudeva Bhavutsaya Krishna Matvarva Kamyana Prichiti Shreya Atmana. Amen. Srinara Vacha Nati Chittam Idam Vipra Vasudeva Bhubutsaya Krishna Matvarbakam Yanna Prishtati Shreya Atmanaha Nati Chittam Idam Vipra Vasudeva Bhubutsaya Krishna Matvarbakam Yanna Prishti Shreya Atmanaha. Ladies? Srinara Vacha Nati Chittam Idam Vipra Vasudeva Bhubutsaya Krishna Matvarbakam Yanna Krishati Shreya Atmanaha Srinara Vacha Nati Chittam Idam Vipra Vasudeva Bhubutsaya Krishna Matvarbakam Yanna Krishati Shreya Atmanaha Students? Srinara Vacha Mati Chitram Idam Vipra Vasudeva Bhubutsaya Krishna Matvarbakam Yanna Krishati Shreya Atmanaha Srinara Vacha Nati Chittam Idam Vipra Vasudeva Bhubutsaya Krishna Matvarbakam Yanna Krishati Shreya Atmanaha Srinara Vacha Nati Chittam Idam Vipra Vasudeva Bhubutsaya Krishna Matvarbakam Yanna Krishati Shreya Atmanaha Srinara Vacha Nati Chittam Idam Vipra Vasudeva Bhubutsaya Krishna Matvarbakam Yanna Krishati Shreya Atmanaha Srinara Vacha Srinara said Na, not Ati, very Chitram, wonderful Idam, this Vipra, O Brahmanas Vasudeva, Vasudev, Bhubutsaya, with the desire of learning. Kritsnam, Lord Krishna, Matva, thinking. Arbakam, a boy. Yet, the fact that. Na, from us. Prichchati, he asks. Shreya, about the highest good. Atmanaha, for himself. Translation. Srinara Muni said, O Brahmanas, it is not so amazing that in his eagerness to know, Vasudeva has asked it about his ultimate benefit, for he considers Krishna a mere boy. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami relates Narada's thoughts. Srinara understood how Vasudeva, in line with the mood of pretending to be an ordinary householder, asked the sages about karma yoga. Although he had already attained spiritual goals, even great yogis and rishis cannot achieve. But Narada was still concerned that Vasudeva might create an awkward mood by treating Lord Krishna as a mere child in the presence of all the sages. Narada and the other sages felt obliged to maintain their attitude of reverence toward Lord Krishna, so how could they ignore him and presume to answer Vasudeva themselves? To avoid this embarrassment, Narada took this opportunity to remind everyone present of Sri Krishna's absolute supremacy. So when I was at the meetings, Vaisheshika, when he gives class, at the end of the class, he asks people for reflections So it's kind of nice because then maybe someone doesn't have a question, but maybe there was something that really stuck out in their mind. So I'm going to ask the students and everyone to kind of think like what kind of struck you, if anything, about the class. So if we have a little time at the end, then I could just ask different students what they remembered about it. It kind of helps you pay better attention. So in these four verses, there's a lot of different points. The one point that they made is that they were afraid that Vasudev was going to have a different mood other than the mood of the sages. The sages have a mood of awe and reverence, but Vasudev, of course, is Krishna's father, so he has a different kind of a mood. But that's natural for a father and a mother to have a different mood than someone who's worshiping in awe and reverence. Also, another point that they bring up, Vasudev asked a question: what can he do to counteract work with further work? So Vasudev is probably asking this question also for our benefit, but he's referring to fruitive activity. In the Bhagavad Gita, it explains fruitive activity as a banyan tree that is extremely deep-rooted, very deep-rooted. And Prabhupada explains that it's that fruit of work that binds us to this material world and causes to transmigrate, you know, birth after birth. So it's very important to be able to cut that root. And Prabhupada also explains that the best way of cutting that root is to engage in devotional service, to change that fruit of work either by giving the results to Krishna. If someone has a job, they may give some of the money as a donation to the temple or use it somehow in Krishna's service. And in that way, it purifies and it becomes karma yoga. And eventually, Prabhupada explains, it turns it into bhakti yoga if one continues to serve in that way. And as it turns into bhakti yoga, the devotee becomes more and more attracted to Krishna and begins to worship the deity. He becomes attracted to hearing Krishna's pastimes and ultimately will come to the lotus feet of the Lord. So that's something that we all have to remember, that whatever we're doing, even when we're doing schoolwork, we may have a goal to, you know, ultimately want to be a physical therapist, or you want to be a soccer player, or whatever it is that you might want to be. At the same time, our main goal is to serve Krishna and to love Krishna. So how we can incorporate that into, or have that, that's our main purpose. Everything else is kind of secondary. So as I was also, Prabhupada talked about the yoga ladder and how all the different kinds of yoga, we talked about karma yoga, then there's jnana yoga and dhyana yoga. All these kinds of yogis, they ultimately reach up to the highest yoga, which is bhakti yoga. So many people are practicing so many different kinds of yoga, but bhakti yoga is the highest. So Prabhupada says, don't get caught up on a lower rung of the ladder. There may be 100 rungs to a ladder, but if you get stuck on the 30th rung, you can't go very far. And Prabhupada makes the point that Lord Chaitanya is so potent that he actually gave us an elevator instead of having to go up one step after another. Can you imagine a ladder with 100 rungs? That is a long way to go. But we have an elevator. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and performing devotional service, we can take a ladder straight up to the very, very highest step and reside there with the Supreme Lord. So that's why Rupa Goswami, he says the prayer in Namo Mahavadanaya Krishna Prem Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gaura Vishtena Maha, that Lord Chaitanya, he's giving freely what no one else has ever given, pure love of God. So I thought one of the things I'd like to do today is tell a few stories, because I know that you like stories, and just explaining how even very young devotees or young people who weren't devotees, how they became devotees. So they talk about Narada here, so I thought I'd start out with Narada Muni. You know that Narada Muni, in his previous life to be Narada Muni, he was a Gandharva. Does anybody know what a Gandharva is? Yes. Okay, he sings, plays musical instruments. And so Narada Muni's past life, his name was Upavarna, and he was very handsome and very talented in playing music and singing. So there was a big fire yoga going on, and Narada Muni, he was singing devotional songs, but he got distracted by the beautiful heavenly damsels. And the performer of the fire sacrifice, he noticed that right away. So when he saw that, he got really angry at Upavarna, and he said, "You don't belong here." He goes, "I curse you to take a birth as an insignificant human being on the earth planet." Well, that really woke up Upavarna. He was like devastated. He was like, "No, please, I'm sorry. It'll never happen again. Please don't. Please take it away." He said, "Well, I can't take away the curse, but I can tell you that you'll be surrounded by good men." So in his next life, Narada Muni took birth as the son of a maidservant. And luckily for him, his mother served in an ashram. And during the rainy season, the sages and saints would come to that ashram, and they would stay there and chant their prayers. And so Narada Muni would help to serve them. And he would also take prasadam that the sages, their remnants, and he would learn prayers from them. And an interesting, really interesting point that Prabhupada makes about prasadam, he compares it to an infectious disease. What is an infectious disease? Can anybody say what that is? Yes, Garanga? Really quickly. It's really easy to catch. So Prabhupada says that a pure devotee and prasadam, they're like infectious diseases in the sense that they can spread love of God so quickly. And by taking prasadam also, love of God can spread so quickly. So his association with these great sages and the taking their remnants, it was very infectious. So Narada Muni started becoming very attached to these sages. And when it came time at the end of the rainy season for them to go, he was actually really sad. He didn't want them to go. And he expressed his sadness to them. He was like, "Wow, you know, I don't want you to go." And they said, "Well, don't worry. You've learned so much. So just keep on praying. Keep on praying. Keep on meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everything will be okay." So Narada Muni, he was a little crestfallen, but he had his instructions. He had his mom. But then as time went on, his mother was outside maybe collecting flowers or collecting vegetables to cook, and she was bitten by a snake. And as fate would have it, his mom, his only parent, his mom, she died. So then he was completely alone. He didn't have any other ties. But he did have the instructions of the sages. So he went into the forest, and he wandered till he found a beautiful, inhabitable place. And he decided he would just stay there and he would meditate. So that's what he did. And he just meditated day after day, just eating fruits and berries and just drinking the pure water from the lake. And one day as he was meditating, he saw Krishna. Krishna appeared before him. And he was so excited. It said his body was thrilled. His entire body was completely thrilled by seeing the Supreme Lord. But after a time, then it went away, and he kept on wandering, he wanted to find Krishna again, but then he heard a voice, and the voice said, "You will not see me again in this birth." That only one who's completely devoid of any desire for anger and lust and greed, they can see me. So when Narada Muni heard that, he actually became very enthusiastic, and it sent kind of a rush of renunciation through his body. He knew what he wanted to do then. And so he just continued his meditation, continued his service of offering prayers, and then his next life, he became the Narada Muni that we know. So it's pretty amazing to think that here this person who was just born, he wasn't educated, it wasn't a particularly elevated birth, but because of his qualification, he became such a great sage in our line. Another story that I thought I would briefly tell is another story about a boy who was only 5 years old, and that boy was Dhruva Maharaj. I know you all know the story, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. But you know, his father, what was his father's name? Does anybody remember? Karanga? Uttanapada. And his father was, he was a very great king. He had two wives, as kings often had in those times. He had Saruchi and Suniti. And so Dhruva and his brother, they were playing in the palace, and his stepbrother went to get up on the king's lap and play. And so Dhruva went to get up too. He was trying to get up. His father wasn't paying much attention to him. And then his stepmother spoke. His stepmother said, "Dhruva, no, don't try to get up on your father's lap." He says, "You're not qualified. You're not qualified because you weren't born from my womb." She said, "If you want to sit on your father's lap, you should perform some austerities and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then you can get on your father's lap." Pretty heavy duty. And Dhruva was a Kshatriya, and it said when she said that, he became so affected, became so stung, that they compared it to a snake. When a snake gets hit by a stick, he may breathe very heavily. So Dhruva was breathing. He was so hurt. Can you imagine somebody telling you that you couldn't go on your father's lap? So he went back to see his mom, and he was breathing heavily. He was crying, and he went in and he told his mom what had happened, Suniti, and she felt terrible. Can you imagine? The mother was like, it described that she was like burning, and that her face weathered like a leaf that was burnt. And she explained to Dhruva, "Yes, it's true. I'm not a favorite wife. And so there's nothing I can do about what's happened." But Dhruva, he was so disturbed. His mother all gave him an instruction, similar to the stepmother, but in a loving way, and said, he said, "What can I do?" She said, "Well, you can worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So that's what Dhruva decided to do. And he was so determined that he went to the forest, and he started, it said, in the first month, he just ate fruits and berries on every third day. And in the second month, he ate grass and leaves every 6 days. And in the third month, he drank water, but only every 9 days. And in the fourth month, he mastered the breathing process, and he only took a breath, inhaled every 12 days. I mean, I can't even imagine that. And in the fifth month, he stood on one toe with his hands folded and meditated on the Lord. And I was actually hoping to be able to show you a picture of Pushkar Prabhu's painting, because he has a wonderful painting. But he couldn't find it online. It wasn't on his website. It's in Italy. It's in Villa Vrindavan. But Dhruva's standing there with his eyes closed and with his hands folded on one foot. And because of his austerities, the entire planetary system, the demigods are like, they can't breathe either. You know, it's caused a disturbance in the entire universe. So ultimately, Krishna appears to him. Prabhupada says that Dhruva, because of his love, he captures the Lord. He captures the Lord. So he is in ecstasy. He's just, you know, he's got his eyes closed. And all of a sudden, Krishna disappears. So he's like, "Whoa, wait a minute. What happened? And, you know, Dhruva was praying for what he wanted was, he wanted a kingdom that was better than anything that anybody had in all the three worlds. That was his desire. So when his meditation broke and he opened his eyes, there Krishna was standing right in front of him. So he was like, "Oh my gosh." And then he realized that what he had wanted, this was something material. He wanted something that was, you know, a position that was greater than any in the three worlds. So Krishna granted that to him. But you know what Dhruva said? He said, "I was asking for pebbles, and bits of broken glass and seeing you before me, it's like having the most valuable jewels. So Dhruva realized what was the real worth. And again, it's showing, in both these stories, it's showing that by serving the brahmanas and following the brahmanas' instructions, that you can get whatever you want. There's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udara dikti brena bhakti yoga na jajeta purusham param. And it says that whatever you want, you can get by worshiping Krishna. It's not so good to ask Krishna for something material. Just like Dhruva found out, he asked for something material and he got it. But really all he wanted was to serve Krishna when he saw Krishna. But at the same time, if we have a material desire, it's still better to go to Krishna for it. Like if you worship the demigods, all right, but if you go to the source, that's Krishna. So by worshiping the brahmanas and worshiping Krishna, then ultimately everything that we need, we will receive. So one other quick story, and this story I wanted to tell, I thought it was significant because it's about what happens if you offend a brahmana and how important it is to serve the brahmanas and respect the brahmanas. I actually learned that there's at least one family in this community that when the child wakes up, he immediately goes to his father and he touches his father's feet and offers respects. And when he does that, the father says, now go to your mother. Then he goes to his mother and touches her feet and offers her respects. We're living in a culture where respect isn't emphasized, is it? In many movies that we see, or if you watch TV, or just if you just hang out, it's not considered very important to respect your mother and your father, but actually, according to the Vedas, it's so important. And when you don't respect your parents and you don't respect the elders, you're hurting yourself. And that's something to think about. It's so important, like older devotees, your mom and dad, we should always make a point of serving them and doing whatever we can, because that is going to help us more than any fruit of activity, more than studying for the test, more than getting into college. There's devotees in our movement who never went to college, but yet they're speaking in front of parliament. They're giving classes all over the world to the most wealthy businessmen. So, and that is because of their devotional service and all the respect. So the story I'm going to tell briefly is the story of King Ambarish. And King Ambarish, he was a wonderful Vaishnav. And of course, a Vaishnav is the highest. It's even higher than a Brahmana. So King Ambarish, he was a wonderful king. And he, with Ekadashi day, he was fasting. And the next day was Dwadasi. So he was getting ready to break his fast. And Durvasa Muni showed up. And Durvasa Muni was a mystic yogi. And he performed so many austerities that he could travel throughout the universe at will. And he was pretty proud of what he was able to do. He was not a pure devotee. And one of the differences here is that he was a little envious of King Ambarish, because Ambarish got so much notoriety, so much fame, and he was like, look at what I can do, and he's just an ordinary king. I don't get why he's getting so much attention. So he went to visit King Ambarish, and King Ambarish welcomed him in and invited him to come and honor Prashadam. He said, okay, thank you so much. I'm going to go offer prayers, I'm going to bathe, and then I'll come back. So he went to do that, and it took an extraordinary amount of time. And in the meantime, it came time for King Ambarish to break his fast. But yet, Durvasa Muni wasn't there, so he wasn't sure what to do. He didn't want to be rude and take prasadam first, so he consulted the brahmanas. The brahmanas said, well, if you just drink some water, that'll be like breaking your fast, but not really. Kind of breaking, but not really breaking. So that's what he did. But Durvasa Muni, he sensed, because of his mystic power, he sensed that Ambarish Maharaj had broken his fast. So when he came back, he was furious at him for breaking his fast. So furious that he pulled some matted locks from his head and he created a fiery demoness who was ready to burn King Ambarish Maharaj to ashes. And King Ambarish, he just stood there with folded hands, explained fearlessly. A devotee is fearless because he knows that Krishna is going to protect him. Krishna says, I am their heart, and they are my heart. So Krishna always has his devotees' interest. So what happened is, Krishna, because he knew what was going on, everyone's heart, he sent his Sudarshan Chakra, and the Sudarshan Chakra immediately started, burned up the fiery goddess, and sprang towards Durvasa Muni, started chasing him. So here's Durvasa Muni. He is running and running and running and always looking behind his back, seeing this, you know, Sudarshan Chakra trying to pursue him, trying to kill him. And wherever he goes, he can't escape. He goes to Shiva Loki, tries to take shelter. Can't happen. Everywhere he goes, he doesn't get any shelter. So finally, he goes to Vaikuntha, and he sees Lord Narayan, and he's begging him, please help me. You know, please save me from the Sudarshan Chakra, but not able. He said, I can't. I'm sorry. I'm not able to do that. You offended my devotee. If you want relief from this offense, you have to go to the devotee. So again, this idea of not offending devotees, so important. So finally, Durvasa Muni travels back, running the entire way, and this whole thing has taken a year. In the meantime, Ambarish Maharaj, he's standing there and he's praying for the welfare of Durvasa Muni. He's not like, ha ha, you tried to kill me, you deserve this. That's not his mood. He feels sorry, you know, he feels sorry that the situation happened and that Durvasa Muni isn't a pure devotee. So he's praying for him. Durvasa Muni comes and asks, please forgive me. Ambarish says, of course I forgive you. And there he is with an array of wonderful prasadam and asks him to sit down and honor prasadam with him. And Durvasa Muni, again, he is just completely flabbergasted, dumbfounded. He can't believe it. After all that's happened, and Ambarish Maharaj bears no ill will. He just wants to help it. And then he realized how exalted Vaishnavas are. That their only purpose, you know, just like we say the prayer, Vanchakalpa Trubhyas Cha, Kripas Sindhubhyeva Cha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Maha. And what does that mean? Who can translate that for me? Dryer trees? Okay. So the devotees are just like desire trees because they're full of compassion for the fallen souls. So these stories, they illustrate what you can do even as a young, it's not like, don't be like Prahlad Maharaj's friends where like, oh, I'm only 5 years old. I'm going to play. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But when I get older, that's when I'm going to get serious about Krishna consciousness. Why shouldn't we think like that? Why shouldn't we do that? Why is it important to be serious now? Can anybody say? I mean, I'm sure that, who said that? Death can come at any moment. Prabhupada says, what is old? You may die tomorrow. So you're old. You may be 3 years old. You may die tomorrow. You're it means you're old. So that should always be foremost. That we're always just trying to think of what we can do and how we can perform a devotional service. So we don't have a lot of time left, but for the last some minutes, maybe someone can share about a point that they wrote down or that they remembered that they'd like to share. Who would like to give a reflection? Yes, Gauranga. Bhakti yoga is the highest of all yoga. That's important, isn't it? That's really important. Somebody else? Yes, Nishta. Okay, very nice, yes.
If there's 100 rungs in the ladder, then Lord Chaitanya, he came and he gave us the elevator instead of climbing the vaulting.
Pretty wonderful, huh? We don't have to go through all that trouble. Okay, one of the boys. Come on, I'm going to pick on somebody if you don't raise your hand. Radish, 1 point. I know you got your little notebook there. I know you wrote stuff down. Or just anything you remember that was interesting.
Another point is that
Yeah. Right. Thank you. Radesh? That was great, wasn't it? I loved that quote when I read it. That pure devotees and prasadam are like infectious diseases. It can just spread. The way Prabhupada speaks is so brilliant. So yeah, that was really good. Thanks for bringing that up, Radesh. Yes. Very good, very good. Okay. Okay, any other points? Anybody else? Yes, Shanti. Oh, good. I'm glad I didn't go through it in more detail then, because you already... Okay, good. All right. Anybody have any questions besides reflections? Yes. Can which instance?
Well, the incident where he came and Duryodhan sent him to take because he knew that they had already eaten.
Oh,
so
yeah,
he
right.
So that it would be cursed upon them.
Right.
And they had already eaten.
So yeah.
Then Krishna rescued them and saved.
Right. Right.
But he still have that fiery potential. I guess he didn't exercise.
They say old habits die hard, right? And that's why it's important to develop good habits when you're young. You're so fortunate that you're in the Gurukula and you're able to, you know, just always engage in service in so many ways. So, yes, Vinita. Can any of the students know that?
Yes.
Who? Okay, go ahead.
Daksha, yes. And he was the doctor. He said that he cursed him and his family. But he cursed him and he would never have home.
Why did he curse him? Why?
Yeah, and because, right, that he was liberating...
Yeah, because he's a progenitor, and he wants more children.
Actually, Prabhupada said he suffered from that same curse. He was certain of it, because, you know, so many of the young people left their families and came. But sometimes curses, you know, they can work out. They can be good. All right, well, thank you. Anybody else have anything they'd like to share? Okay, thank you so much for your kind attention.